Hello, everyone. I'm Rania Kallik, and this is Dispatches. Like all colonizers before them, the Israelis promote themselves to the world as modern, forward-thinking, civilized, and feminist. That's right. The country practicing apartheid and carrying out genocide wants you to believe that when it comes to women's rights, they're breaking barriers, unlike their enemy, the savage natives, who they portray as inferior, backwards, and sexist. So sexist, the Israelis have tried to justify their genocide in Gaza by spreading what's been revealed as fraudulent accusations of sexual violence. At the same time, the documented Israeli sexual violence against Palestinian women has been largely ignored. So has the role of Palestinian women in the resistance. But we're not ignoring that here, especially not during Women's Her Story Month. To discuss colonial feminism and the way it's playing out in the Israeli genocide in Gaza, I'm joined by Dr. Rabeb Abdelhadi, the founding director and senior scholar of the Arab and Muslim Ethnicities and Diaspora Studies Program at San Francisco State University and head of the Oral History Project, Teaching Palestine. But before we jump into it, this is just part of this episode. The full interview is available to Breakthrough News members only. You can become a member at patreon.com/breakthroughnews. Dr. Rabeb Abdelhadi, welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be back.
It's such a pleasure to have you on. And there's so much to talk about with regard to colonial feminism, imperial feminism, as it relates to the ongoing genocide in Gaza. But I think, you know, a good place to start here would be to talk about what is happening to women in Gaza. This, you know, what the mainstream media wants to call a war. But this genocide has been ongoing now. We're into the 6 months. And for 6 months now, women have been dealing with the most atrocious, horrific, nightmarish circumstances imaginable. I mean, not just women, also children, also men. But yes. I mean, this genocide has taken a huge toll on women and children specifically. As of now, we don't know exactly how many because there's still so many people trapped under the rubble, but there's over 12,300 children who have been killed. It's more children than have been killed in conflicts in the last 4 years combined, I believe. More children in Gaza in 4 months killed than in 4 years of worldwide wars. Yes. As for women, over 9,000 women have been killed. I'm sure that's an underestimate. That was as of March 5th. And again, there are still so many people trapped in the rubble. So why don't we start there? Can you break down what it is that, as you've seen, the horrors that women are having to endure in Gaza?
Yes, thank you, Rania. I think I want to also start where you also said that it's not just women. I mean, there is the whole genocide against Palestinian people is being conducted by the Israeli settler colonial regime and the continued complicit participation of the United States that continues to send arms and military to Israel. So I think that's really, really important to emphasize that this is a genocide. This is a crime against humanity to eliminate the Palestinian people. It's really part of settler colonialism to eliminate, get rid of them completely in order to fulfill the Zionist prophecy, a land without people, right? You cannot justify that without it. So there is the extent of the murder, the amount, the destruction that's going on every single aspect of life is to destroy Palestinian people, to destroy Palestine, to eliminate any kind of cultural and heritage sites, eliminate the agricultural places, buildings, everything, to the point that there is a huge famine now. There is babies are dying in incubators because there is no electricity to come to them. There is no fuel. Israel has prevented all of this stuff to go in. There is, I think, between 55 and 60,000 women who are pregnant, Palestinian women who are pregnant. And then you're talking about also their families. So I think it's really important to also talk about the wholesale attack against Palestinian people. And we're talking about the women. Partly, I mean, you invited me to the show because it is Women Her Story Month, March, and also because there is a particular discourse within like the Zionist establishment, racist, white supremacists, and so on, that only focuses on women and children, and basically treats men's lives as non-valuable. Men, Palestinian men, Arab Muslims, it's okay to kill as many as possible. They are not, but they are. And then the whole question of actually they are the sons, the partners, the fathers, the brothers of the women who and the children who are being killed. And we've seen a lot of this. We've seen that in all the wars, by the way. Everybody remembered the Muhammad al-Durra from the Aqsa Intifada, whose father was trying to protect him from being, and the kid was killed, was martyred. So it was September 30th, 2000. So there is this thing about destroying also the life, the new life of Palestinians, destroying Palestinian also children, a whole generation. So there is something that is an attack. And then there is specific attack about the women because of their role in both because of their role in society and because of their role in the like social role as reproducers of the population. They give birth, they train, they are the ones who rear mostly, they focus on mostly, which is all over the world, by the way. This is something that's not exceptional to Palestine. And they also work the fields, they're part and parcel of the society. So the attack against the Palestinian women and the children and the men, of course, it's incredible. It's horrendous that what's going on. And anywhere else in the world, this would be completely shocking. It's shocking, actually, to the whole humanity. It's not the only countries that are basically like standing by Israel. It's only the United States and Canada. Even Canada demanded the ceasefire. So the United States is isolated in its. And if it weren't for the United States sending in a flood of weapons, Israel would have to stop the war immediately. So all the words, we find them empty words by the United States. So there is a particular focus. And also, let's not forget, Palestinian women have played a very important role and continue to play a very important role in the people's society, in the people's movement, in the people's struggle. So women are part and parcel of the society. They're not exceptionalized. There isn't a species of Palestinians only called women. And there is a species of other. This is the Palestinian population completely attacked. But we speak about women, both because we have gender hierarchy, like we have it all over the world. So we do talk about the whole question of the liberation of women. It's a very, very important question. And also because the Zionists and the Israeli press and the media and the colonial media and the Orientalist media have also made a big issue about accusing Palestinians of mistreating, including mass rape, of Israeli women on October 7th, Aqsa flood, and basically making a big issue of it and completely disregarding anything that's happening to Palestinian women. So we're speaking about that because there is a lie that's being perpetuated. And at the same time, there are facts that are not being discussed and are not being talked about. And this has to do with the discrepancy and the hypocrisy in how you talk about a particular community under colonialism, colonized community, and how you talk about the colonizers. The oppressors always tend to be played up in the dominant media, official circles, and so on, that support the oppression. That, for example, in this case, the United States is promulgating all of this, despite multiple proof to that. And of course, the refusal completely to speak about what's happening to Palestinian women and children and girls and everybody in Gaza. Once in a while, they'll publish a report, and then basically they'll come back and they'll go back to Israel feeling insecure and feeling worried and so on, which is always the weapon of the oppressors to divert attention from what's happening to the oppressed by refocusing attention on themselves.
And I want to go more specifically or have you elaborate a bit more on what you mentioned, the sexual assault claims. You know, we've seen the unraveling of these fraudulent rape claims, mostly led by outlets like the Electronic Intifada, but now it's being picked up by outlets like The Intercept, essentially reporting showing that the reports that have been spread across the world by the Israelis are fake, are lies, at least at this point. So I'm just curious, you know, when it comes to these claims by the Israeli government that were spread about mass sexual assault taking place on October 7th against Israelis by Hamas. And again, I want to emphasize Western media spread these claims, despite the fact that there were so many holes in them, no actual survivors coming forward, proven liars changing their stories over and over again. They promoted it as fact. And, you know, people see outlets like the New York Times report something like that, and they think, well, this is a credible outlet. It must be true. So yes. I'm curious if you could explain a bit, you know, what is the colonial paradigm, the colonial feminist paradigm behind the fact that Israel is able, the Israeli government, which has been proven over and over again to be a government that lies, like pathologically. I don't even know. We need another word because lying is an understatement, right? What is the colonial feminist paradigm behind what drives the Western media, the Orientalist media, as you called it, to run with these claims and use them to justify a genocide?
Yeah, I think this is a very important point. Let's first say, when did this happen? Israel began to lose the public relations battle. The minute and Israel is actually failing to achieve any of its goals, any of its declared goals in the genocidal war that it's waging against Gaza. None of the goals that Israel has declared are there. When we talk about genocide and we talk about erasure of the Palestinian people, these are the unspoken war motives for the Israeli government and for the settler colonial regime. Once every single time that Israel feels that it is actually losing the public relations, its supporters, the Zionist lobby industries, the Israel itself, and so on, and they have a very, very massive propaganda machine. It's called Hasbara, referring to the diplomatic public diplomacy, but actually it's the whole question of spreading lies, targeting Palestinian activism, targeting Palestinian voices, and so on. They always find something to divert attention all the time. Every single time you see that displacing, and this is the tools, as I said, this is the tools of the colonizers and the oppressors. Anytime the colonized speak for themselves, the colonizers try to invert the equation and speak about themselves. So then the focus is placed on them, and the colonized are completely erased from the equation. So in this sense, yes, Israel came up with these allegations. We know that none of it is true because there have been multiple investigations, electronic intifada, gray zone. I think it's really one of the most important places where actually have been the Feminist Solidarity Network for Palestine that has taken the whole New York Times article written by Gettling, who actually was the bureau chief in Africa and made a lot of racist statements about Africa too. By the way, yeah, he won an award, but if you look at it, and I remember his name because he actually made like really, really racist statement that I ended up like tweeting about him. You're reporting about Africa and you're using racist colonial language. And then the two other people with him, they've never ever done it. There is this woman, Anat, and Schwartz, and then her nephew of her partner, Adam Salah, never has any experience or whatever. Adam Salah did not have any experience. He actually was a reporter on cooking, on food, and an amateur. He's not really a serious reporter. And Anat herself, they brought her in as a videographer, and they told her, you need to do this. And she, by the way, she came and she confessed that they came to her, they asked her to participate and so on, and she went to participate. The same thing also happened with the people that they interviewed. Remember the big article, the woman in the black dress on the front page of the New York Times, screams of rape or whatever. And then the every single person who has been writing about it, including the Feminist Solidarity Network for Palestine, which actually created, along with Writers Against the War, a tableau called New York Crimes, not New York Times, New York Crimes, and went step by step over every single thing that Israel has claimed that was a lie. The whole question of that, we did not know that we should really collect evidence on rape. There is no evidence. So now the whole story spinning is, why is it that there is no evidence? It's not that there is evidence. Why is it that there is no evidence? Now they're saying, oh, because we collected the remains and we didn't do forensic analysis. But you did forensic analysis to distinguish the bodies of Palestinian fighters from the bodies of the Israelis. That's when they reduced the number. Remember, it was 1,400. Now they said around 1,200. And still the figures are murky. And then the group that went in, Zaka, that went in and did that, is actually has been exposed as a group that's involved in multiple corruption, in basically scams, to scam people to donate, to give funding and so on. They also needed to counter the real information, the statements of the women, the people who were captive by Hamas and other Palestinian resistance, who came out when there were the exchange of prisoners or exchange of captives, because Palestinian prisoners are hostages as well, which is now 8,000. They came. They all said that we were treated really nicely. One woman said they taught my child to do this. The other woman said that they actually put a handkerchief when they shook her hand and so on. So there were all of this kind of publicity, real evidence that Palestinians were not maltreating the captives, mm-hmm. unlike what Israel is doing to Palestinian prisoners. But on top of it also, there is the whole question about even what happened on October 7th. Because remember, the first lie we heard is that 40 children's heads were chopped. And it was even repeated by Biden. And all the investigation, including by Israeli press and so on, not true. Then they claimed that a Palestinian Israeli child was burned in an oven in order to invoke the Holocaust and say, see, Palestinians are burning Israelis, and this is because they actually have hatred against Jews. Even though it was very clear from the beginning that the Aqsa flood goals, the Palestinians said specifically, this is because we already told Israel once again and again and again, stop attacking our people in Aqsa, and they're still doing it, stop targeting Palestinian communities, and stop, and that Israel did not stop. And they were only there for 5-6 hours. I mean, it wasn't really enough time to even do all of these horrendous things. None of the story adds up. None of it adds up. But they kept adding, and then they said there were children, two girls who were raped. There were actually one girl, and that wasn't the case. So there is all these issues. And then they said, oh, they were in different forms of undress. It was 6 in the morning. They were sleeping. A lot of the Israelis came out in their pajamas. But this, all of this stuff is big. And why this is? Because it's very convenient. Because there is a response. There is a Western imaginary, let's say also an American imaginary, that is very much inflicted with racism, with white supremacy, with Orientalism, with anti-Palestinian, anti-Arab, anti-Muslim racism, specifically constructing our men, Arab Muslims and Palestinians, as excessively homophobic, excessively sexist, and that they're bloodthirsty, irrational. They do not know what they're doing. They just want to. They want to have Jewish blood. They want to have Jewish blood at their hands and so on. Completely erasing the whole question about, it was always about capturing Israelis in order to exchange with Palestinian prisoners who are in prison. And Israel is actually confirming that, because before October 7th, there were 4,000 prisoners. Now there is almost 8,000. So the number doubled, which also points to Israel's probably hidden strategy of increasing the number so it can improve its position in negotiations. People who have rationality and a mind, they look at all the facts and say, this is what's going on. And they have not been able to prove it. Even this so-called UN mission, Premila Batten, who went there, she said, I wasn't collecting evidence. I was listening. I wanted to give support. Support to whom? You give support to existing victims. You don't give support to non-existing. Also, they want to affirm that Palestinians engage in mass rape as a weapon of war in order to consider a crime against humanity, because Israel and its allies, the U.S., are very much bothered by the proceedings of the International Court of Justice, which were brought nicely by South Africa, a country that has gone through apartheid and has been in solidarity with the Palestinians. And I think it's rightly so. to do that in collaboration with many Palestinian lawyers. So the legal team was actually made up of South African, Palestinian, international lawyers working with each other. And so this case is very real. And the International Court of Justice actually did not deny that this is genocide. Same thing happened with the case in California by Palestinian victims whose families were killed, who brought a lawsuit against Biden, against Blinken, and against Austin, the Secretary of State and the Secretary of War and the President of the United States, Genocide Joe. And the judge himself, he could not let the court go on because of the technicality in the U.S. law, legal law, that he couldn't. But he told the Palestinians, I see you. And he said that there is a possibility of genocide. So this is the whole question of, is it genocide or not? So that's it. That question has been settled already. So Israel is a very tight, let's say, position. The only way it can actually function, two ways. One is to really punish in a very brutal, escalate its brutalities against the Palestinians, deny them food, deny them water, deny them communication, deny them shelter, even when they say, okay, people really need to move from the north to the south. And the actual Israelis say, this is where you should go. And people go to save their families. Israel bumps them. Israel claims that they want to bring in aid. They claim that they're humanitarian. And then they shoot at the people who are going to get aid. So this is the way, punishing Palestinians, breaking them, because Israel has a serious problem with Palestinians, like any other colonizer, standing up for themselves. A good Palestinian is a dead Palestinian. A dead Palestinian, because even the collaborators don't even work. They're not actually reliable. So this is one. And the second one is the publicity, the public relations, because they're losing, because the majority of the world community, including people in the United States, now the numbers that are actually horrified by what Israel is doing, the numbers of the people in the streets, the tactics that the fighters against the war are doing, it's just incredible, amazing. It's a qualitative change. This is really bothering them. How are they going to deal with this dilemma? They keep escalating this and this and this. And because there is colonial feminism, imperial feminism, white supremacist feminism that is already prepared and set. The mindset is already there to actually disbelieve people of color, indigenous people, colonized communities. They immediately, of course, believe the other white Jewish supremacist regime that corresponds to what they are trying to do. And it's more likely to believe them than to believe any of us. You and I go say anything, nobody believes us. We are always questioned.
Well, I actually want to give a couple examples of that and then ask you and kind of segue into another aspect of this. And I want to apologize to you and the audience for what I'm about to show you, because it's going to be triggering, you guys. I'm about to show you the one and only imperial feminist herself, Hillary Clinton. This was Hillary Clinton back in December. After some of these rape allegations had begun to be debunked already. So let's go ahead and listen to what Hillary Clinton had to say.
As you well know, many women and girls were attacked brutally by Hamas on October 7th, and they have testified to the gender-based violence that they both experienced and witnessed. As a global community, we must respond to weaponized sexual violence wherever it happens with absolute condemnation. There can be no justifications and no excuses. Rape as a weapon of war is a crime against humanity. Such atrocities have no place in any society or any conflict. It is outrageous that some who claim to stand for justice are closing their eyes and their hearts to the victims of Hamas.
So that's Hillary Clinton. And then I'm not done, Rabab. Sadly, I'm not done. Because then we have another very blonde propagandist for the Israelis, Dana Bash from CNN. This was actually not too far from when Hillary Clinton made that statement. So you're about to hear numbers that have been far surpassed right now. But she challenges one of the representatives from Congress and then makes a wild claim that I want to definitely debunk. But here we go.
15,000 Palestinians have been killed in Israeli airstrikes, three quarters of whom are women and children.
And it's horrible, but you don't see Israeli soldiers raping
well, Dana,
Palestinian
I think
women.
We're not.
Okay, so that's CNN's Dana Bash, basically saying it doesn't matter that at that point 15,000 Palestinians had been killed in Gaza, because she claims Israeli soldiers don't rape Palestinian women. So actually, that is untrue. That is absolutely untrue. We know that because there have been many cases since Israel stole Palestine. You can go back all the way to 1948, or probably even before that. But furthermore, if we're talking about just since October 7th, actually, the reality is that a UN report came out not too long ago. It was just last month in February. And I'm going to actually put this report up, because it's really important to emphasize some of what we see here. This was a report by UN legal experts about the treatment, Israel's violations of the rights of Palestinian women and girls. And in the statement, the women who were interviewed, actual people who exist, by the way, said that everything from being shot at while holding, you know, white pieces of cloth when they were killed by the Israeli army. So like trying to basically hold the sign of surrender just to get to a safe space. But also in this report, it says at least two female Palestinian detainees were reportedly raped, while others were reportedly threatened with rape and sexual violence. The experts also noted that photos of female detainees in degrading circumstances were reportedly taken by the Israeli army and uploaded to the internet. There's also cases of women being basically kidnapped and disappeared, as well as their babies disappearing, little girls. It says Palestinian women and girls, or some group of Palestinian children not being able to be accounted for after they came into contact with the Israeli army. We still don't know what has happened to these people. And the violations continue. I mean, this report alone is disgusting. I didn't hear Dana Bash cover that report once. I have not heard Hillary Clinton say a word about that report. Not only that, they completely ignore that the Israeli soldiers celebrate everything they're doing on social media. Here are a bunch of photos that have been shared on social media of Israeli soldiers in different parts of Gaza playing with the undergarments of Palestinian women. There's one photo that's become kind of famous where an Israeli soldier basically put up the lingerie of a Palestinian woman on clothing lines and then took a photo of himself and then uploaded it to his dating profile to show how cool he is. And for those who are just listening, I mean, I just have like a little, it's a collage of photos of Israeli soldiers very proudly, literally celebrating wearing the undergarments of women, making like sexual jokes about them, as if they're like trophies of some sort. So all that's to say, I mean, Rabab, when I see this, it's not just that rape, like these fraudulent rape claims are being used to justify a genocide against Palestinians, to play into all the Orientalist colonial frameworks of how we look at brown and black men as they're all savages who just want to rape white women, but also acting as though or pretending as though this stuff isn't actually happening to Palestinian women. As though Palestinian women, especially with what Dana Bash said, right? She said Israeli soldiers aren't raping them. As if like they've been so dehumanized, nobody would ever dare to sexually assault them or something. I mean, there's so much crazy racism going on here. Can you unpack that for me?
Yes, yes. Thank you. Let's start with Hillary Clinton.
Yes,
I find her statement rich. My thing is like, that's rich. Because Hillary Clinton also was brought to the School of International Affairs at Columbia University, whose dean is an Israeli, former Israeli military person. And they had a session with Hillary Clinton, this guy Gitteling, and Sandy Sandberg, and Hillary Clinton made the same claims. And the thing is really important to note that Hillary Clinton was an official representative of the U.S. government that actually claimed that Libyan rebels used Viagra.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to take it back. By the way, the same thing with this Premila of the United Nations. She claimed that Russian soldiers, and this reminds us, remember in the 1990 when the U.S. presented, said that Iraqi soldiers are killing babies in incubators in Kuwait, And it turned out that to be a completely a lie. So one thing I think is really important to cover, that lies are not accidental. They're not isolated. This is a systemic pattern. One, so Hasbara is there. Secondly, Hillary Clinton was also aware of all the crimes of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan, in Iraq, raping, Abu Ghraib. This was a very, very clear thing, and what happened, and also what happened in the prisons of Afghanistan. Hillary Clinton is aware of what happens to Palestinian women and Palestinian men and Palestinian children, because if you talk about gender-based violence, it is not applies only to women. It applies to men, and it also applies, of course, to minors and so on. She's familiar and aware of that. And for her to actually use that to lie, but which is not something new, because they lie all the time, but to actually pretend that she's speaking with credibility, she has no credibility whatsoever. Hillary Clinton, when she was Secretary of State and claimed to be the advocate for women's rights and so on, had an award for supposedly women who advocate for women's rights. One of the women who was invited was Samira Brahim, the Egyptian woman who was the first to speak against the virginity inspections by the Egyptian military that was very repressive. And she was very courageous. But they invited her to come to White House to give her an award. But then they found out that Samira Ibrahim supports Palestine and BDS. They rescinded the invitation. They took it back. So Hillary Clinton does not have a good history that gives us any indication that we should believe what she is saying. But why is it that they're using Hillary Clinton? And why is it that they're using this? Because there is susceptibility. The imaginary, as I said, is already prepared to believe in that, A1, and also to define lives of Palestinians, of colonized people, of indigenous communities, of black and brown communities as not valuable, the same, don't have the same value as the lives of the colonizers. I mean, people want to look up some things, and it's not really that difficult. Theoretically, people can read it. Franz Fanon writes things on violence in the Richard of the Earth, decolonizing Algeria. Yeah, I think the chapter was unveiling Algeria in El Mujahid, in multiple places. Multiple people have written about that again and again and again. And we know that from history, that this happens all the time. But it's now all of a sudden they would like, so I'm still talking about Israeli, but the members of the body of the colonizers. But Hillary Clinton and all of them were very good friends with this Weinstein guy who ended up being participating in the trafficking and the rape of underage girls. They're all involved in it. They're all friends with each other. I mean, if you are your hands are dirty, your hands are not clean, you are actually making claims that you are not standing with. Yes, using rape as a weapon of war is a crime against humanity. The whole question of what happened in Bosnia and Herzegovina, and the whole question of the rape of Bosnian women. But historically also, we do know that Palestinian women, men and children have been sexually, aside what you said here, the whole question, there is so many videos of Israeli soldiers celebrating what's going on. One of the images that I wrote about about the 2014 Israeli war on Gaza, which was about the Israeli soldiers, when they finish their military service, they print t-shirts. And one of the t-shirts they have is an image of a Palestinian mother, pregnant woman. And it says, one shot, two kills. So if you kill a pregnant woman, you kill two Palestinians, the mother and the baby. This is all the stuff. I actually, the title of my article was Celebrating Palestinian death, because they also celebrated. They were sitting in Sderot eating watermelon seeds while the bombs were falling on Gaza. There is the whole question of kind of denying Palestinian humanity altogether. The 1948 and before, you're right, there were many, and now we're hearing about that from Israeli or Zionist Haganah militias who are now coming forward and admitting what has happened. Because we're not, how could we hear from a Palestinian girl from Nakab who was killed and raped? She doesn't live anymore. But they're the ones who are coming and actually making confessions about that. Same thing about the massacres. And so this is kind of like the past is full historically. More recently, right before October 7th, there was a huge, huge story about Israeli soldiers asking and forcing Palestinian girls in Hebron to take off their clothes, to be naked. And this is something that I actually like relate to, because every time as a young Palestinian coming through the bridge or sometimes coming through the airport, whenever we were allowed, Israeli airport, they will take our clothes. They'll take your clothes to quote unquote search them and then leave you for 1 hour, for 2 hours naked in a cubicle. You can't go anywhere. How are you going to, first of all, it's locked from the outside, but even if you're able to break it, how are you going to go naked? I mean, this is whole humiliation that they impose on Palestinians day in and day out. The attack and the beating just last week of women who are trying to go to the Aqsa Mosque to pray or are in the old city of Jerusalem. They're living in their native city. They're being attacked. Also, we heard only since October 7th of how many Israeli soldiers and prison guards. Now, all of these are elements and the police are parts of the Israeli government. This is official. This is not unofficial. This is not some rogue soldier doing this and that. This is something that is part and parcel. How many have been beaten up? How many have been sexually abused? How many have been attacked? The Palestinian prisoners, the children who were released, the women who were released, they all spoke about this. They testified upon their release, even though they were threatened by the Israeli military. Do not say anything. Do not receive anybody. You're not allowed to speak to the press. But they were courageous to come up and say, this is what happened to us. This is only recently, historically. I think it's really important to say that Palestinian documentation, there is documentation of Palestinian women prisoners who were raped. Rasmiya Odeh spoke about that. Many Palestinian women spoke about that. Where was Hillary Clinton when Rasmiya Odeh was being deported from the U.S.? And meanwhile, by the way, at the same time that they deported Rasmiya Odeh because of irregularities on her application for citizenship, they admitted Ayaan Hirzi Ali, the Somali colonial feminist, gave her citizenship in the U.S. So there is the whole question of double standards and hypocrisy that they are engaging in. There is a recording of, for example, Fatma Abu Bakra, who was a Palestinian woman from Gaza, prisoner. And she actually documents word by word and spoke to her lawyer at the time. And this is in a book called Minority Reports, which talks about making women talk. Basically, what do you do in order to torture women, the investigators or the interrogators, in order to make them talk? And she talks about how the Israeli interrogator threatened to rape her, then pushed her clothes, told her they're going to castrate her husband and her children. And this happens again and again. And you know, I've written about this stuff, and this is all documented in so many different places. All the Palestinian prisoner organizations, from the Commission for Prisoners to Ad-Damir to Mandela, there's multiple Palestinian prisoner support organizations. They all speak about what's happening and how, not only how badly abused the prisoners are, but also about the sexual abuse and also of men as well. And they threaten men in prison that they will rape them or they'll force them to rape each other. They threaten them. The Palestinian men come out and speak about that all the time. It's everywhere. The sexual harassment. I mean, I remember even as a young girl going to school, the Israeli soldier standing in a jeep, the Wuriya, right outside of our school, and like saying nasty words towards her and like harassing us and so on. We couldn't do anything because they're occupiers. So this is a historical pattern. This is not something that is actually errant, because they would like to say, oh, this is erratic elements, this is isolated and so on. But actually, the violence and the rape culture is very, very much part of the Israeli settler colonial society, including violence against Israeli women, that Israeli soldiers who come back from their service in the military, they come back and they abuse and they kill and rape their girlfriends, their partners, their wives, and so on. It's all documented, including Israeli ministers who have already been indicted for sexual harassment and so on. This is a regime that is a military regime, that is a settler colonial regime, that obviously sexism and gender hierarchy, oppression, gender violence is part and parcel of it. Where was Hillary Clinton when all of this stuff was happening? And where is she now? Where is she now to talk about what's happening to Palestinian women? Where is she? For me, I don't believe any of this stuff. It's all propaganda. It's all intended to cover up what Israel is doing and divert attention from the genocide that they are conducting against our people in Gaza.
No, beautiful, beautifully, beautifully said. And on that note, you know, I want to also add, and I know that this is something that you have emphasized so much, is Palestinian women aren't these like docile victims, right? They have been in the struggle. They still are in the struggle to liberate Palestine. So I'm curious if you could also highlight some of the historical examples of the role of Palestinian women in the past and present day in the struggle to liberate their land.
Yes, Palestinian women have been involved for over 100 years. We've been colonized for over 100 years. As long as colonialism has been there, Palestinian women have resisted. And we have a lot of evidence from organizing demonstrations, organizing a conference, the first women's conference, which we can talk about that in a minute, maybe, if you would like, about colonial feminists and the connection between the two. And Palestinian women participate in all sorts of life. I mean, you cannot have half of the society not participating anywhere. So Palestinian women participated in tilling the land. The peasants are not just men, the peasants are women and men, and sometimes even younger youth of the family are brought in when they are collecting olives, and people come, and we see that in the olive season when settlers come and either steal or burn the olive trees or pull them out and so on. So in that, Palestinian women have been very much part and parcel of the armed resistance of the Palestinian movement, of the Palestinian resistance movement. We know many Palestinian women have struggled again and again also for the rights of the Palestinian, for the liberation of the Palestine, and for the liberation of women, and for the liberation of the various groups to which they belong, whether you're talking about Palestinian women refugees groups, you're talking about Palestinian women workers groups, Palestinian prisoners, teachers, educators, artists, cultural providers in every single aspect of life. And this is also completely absent from the story, because it is also not in the interest of Israel and the settler colonial regime to actually show that Palestinian women are actually very much involved. And this is one of the things I argued in my PhD dissertation, that Palestinian women, even under occupation and under colonialism, fared well in the liberation movement, because the liberation movement itself is about freedom and liberation. It's itself against about freedom and liberation. It cannot be about oppressing a group within it that's calling for freedom and liberation. And so even if you compare it with the so-called the post-Oslo quasi-state or whatever, actually the lot of women worsened. And at one point, Palestinian women who won International Women's Day, not by themselves, of course, with the whole movement, as a paid holiday, as well as May Day, by the way, because during the 87 Intifada, the Palestinian Authority tried to take that away a few years ago. And so the Palestinian women rose up, almost revolution, and everybody who supports them and so on, and the Palestinian Authority had to reinstate the holiday back. So it didn't really work. So outspoken, strong, speaking up for themselves, which also is not convenient for the colonizers, because you are not supposed to speak up for yourself. There is the gender, the sexism that exists. How come you're so uppity? There is the racism that exists. How come you're so uppity, a person of color? There is the Islamophobia. How dare you speak up as a Muslim? You are supposed to, you're below us. Every single aspect you're talking about, we are constructed, and I'm saying we are, as Palestinians and also as communities of color, indigenous communities, colonized, marginalized communities, as less than, inferior to the oppressor group that promotes its own supremacy. So whether we talk about Jewish supremacy, white supremacy, in South Africa, apartheid, everywhere else. We see that colonialism happens all over the world, Asia, Africa, and Latin America. We don't have time to go into all of it, but it's historic. This is very much part and parcel of colonialism. This is much. This is in the DNA of colonialism, not only thinking of the whole population as inferior, but also always being shocked that members of the colonized community, women, are standing up because they come from colonized societies, colonial societies, in which women do not are not respected. And so when France and Britain and the settlers came and settled the Americas, for example, there is so much oppression of women. Women never had rights. They had to fight even for rights and inheritance. They had women who were accused of being witches. They were burned at the stake. Joan of Arc was killed. I mean, if you look about the whole history, when did women get the vote and so on? All of this stuff, they claim that they are actually the ones who give the model in liberation and feminism. And that's not true. That is not reflected in history. It's just not true in terms of history. Let's study more in history. And see, but it is not in their interest. It's not convenient to make that possible in history.
Absolutely. I mean, actually, when we think about the progress of women's rights in many places, what comes to mind for me is post-revolutionary Cuba, post-revolutionary Soviet Union, post-revolutionary China, where you saw literacy rates and health outcomes and maternal mortality rates, all like social indicators for women skyrocketed in these places. They got the right to vote. Whereas the regressive, archaic nature of these actual colonial societies that, I mean, yeah, we forget, they burned women for being witches. I mean, this is the superior society they wanted to replace Native Americans with, is with people who burned women. I mean, it's completely insane. And that brings me to, I think, the broader question here. And this is, you know, you have expertise on so much. And one thing that you have a lot of expertise on is the issue of colonial feminism. So I'm curious, you know, for our audience here at Breakthrough, how would you very, I guess, briefly define terms like colonial feminism and imperial feminism? I mean, we just gave a lot of practical examples in present day Gaza and what has, you know, this country that calls itself Israel. But also, I mean, historically speaking, we've given examples as well. But if you had to condense it into like an easily comprehensible definition, what would it be?
Okay, so I will just say, I mean, there is imperialism because of the time of imperialism and the expansion of imperialism, and colonial that is actually also supports colonialism, and it's part and parcel colonial discourses. And we say it's Islamophobic, it's anti, it's racist, it's white supremacist, and so on. And it is, and the trick about that is that it is feminism. So because it is feminism, it is supposed to be something good because it's about the liberation of women. So that's where it also becomes very tricky, that those who are demanding the liberation of women are actually engaging in the repression and the oppression of women other than themselves. And this, the colonial and imperial feminism, usually is exercised by those who claim to be part, and it's a movement, it's a trend, it's not, there are individuals, and I'll talk about them in a minute, but examples, okay? But it is part and parcel of this kind of like the colonial mentality, and colonialism depends on thinking of people who are colonized inferior.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to hear the rest, you can access it by becoming a Breakthrough News member at patreon.com/breakthroughnews.